comes another big recruit.
Hello.
Hello.
So I'm still eating.
Okay, we can still say hello even if you're eating.
I know, I'm apologising to the listener for my eating.
What are you eating?
I'm eating an advent calendar chocolate.
Is it good?
It's always that, you know, advent calendar chocolates are always not as good as normal chocolate. I don't know what's wrong with them, but...
They're just cheap, aren't they?
But they're still, but it's nice.
The advent calendar we've got doesn't have any sort of foil wrapping. It seems to be a bit of a free-for-all.
This is a serious design flaw, because now all of the chocolates have fallen to the bottom, and,
There's no system.
In the right place.
The advent calendar is based on a system, and the system's not delivering the goods.
Jesus would not be impressed.
He wouldn't be. Jesus was a man for a system, as we know. Jesus invented the dining table, do you know that?
Is that so?
That's true.
Well, while we're on the subject of Jesus, there was a news story last week about, supposedly, Jesus, some people are saying that Jesus might have come to England... some kind of gap year travels thing, because the Bible is very vague about what Jesus actually did during his youth. I'm rustling papers a lot here, sorry. Yes, the Bible is very vague about what Jesus did during his youth. It kind of says he was circumcised, and then he was presented at age 12 at the temple, and then Luke says when they had done everything the law of the Lord required, they went back to Galilee, to their own town of Nazareth. But there's a large area of his life that isn't accounted for. So these people, who happen to have a documentary to promote, are saying that he may have come to England and visited Glastonbury and many places in the West Country with his uncle, Joseph of Arimathea.
He had an uncle, Joseph, as well?
Yes, a lot of Josephs in the family.
Was this on the father's side or the mother's side?
It doesn't say, and in fact, people have made up the detail about Joseph being his uncle, because there isn't any reference to that in the Bible either.
They should do some sort of "Who do you think you are, Jesus?"
Think he'd go in for that?
I think he'd be up for that.
Yeah, he hasn't been around for about 2,000 years.
Well, that's it.
He'll come back, especially.
He could do with some PR, some publicity. This is the point.
Exactly,
it's falling off the map. Do we worried about this? Do you think we could be descended from Jesus? Is this possible at all? Because I've always felt maybe.
I don't know. But yeah, what did he do over here? You're probably wondering. He visited some various towns in Cornwall, and he supposedly learnt maths from the Druids and built a church in the Somerset town that remains to this day a centre for New Age spiritualists. This guy who made the documentary, whose name is Ted Harrison, said, "If anyone was wanting to learn about spirituality and thinking, not just the Jews, but also the classical and Greek world, they would have come to Britain, which was the centre of learning at the time. He would have come to learn astronomy and geometry, which were being taught at universities by the Druids." So presumably he would have been subject to the high fees, foreign student fees. Who would have paid for him to travel to Europe and learn at these universities in the West Country?
That's true. Well, the fees are high for international students. That's a good point. I don't know how he could have afforded it. I think the whole water into wine thing, that's probably where he learned that one. That goes down very well with the student populace, and people would be more than happy to have him on their side. He'd be a hit in the student union.
The Druids were up to it at that time, I think.
He could definitely get employed at the union bar with that sort of skills, I reckon. Mm. So he could have got part-time work. That's the best way to support yourself as a student. Everyone knows that.
Definitely. A lot of people are saying, you know, the Druids have this reputation for not being kind of teachery types, but for being a little bit more hostile. Tacitus, for example, said...
I thought Druids were all chilled out. That was my understanding of Druids.
Apparently not. Tacitus said that the Imperial army clashed on Anglesey with Druids who poured forth horrible imprecations and performed barbarous rites at altars stained with the blood of their prisoners and the entrails of men.
Wow.
Jesus would have had to win them over first.
Yeah, that's a tough crowd, but if Jesus was good at one thing, it was winning people over. He's been proving that for many thousands of years.
Mm. So what do we think? Did Jesus really come to England?
It seems unlikely to me.
It does seem like they've just said this because they're English people and they want to, you know...
What's their documentary about?
It's about Jesus coming to England.
That's the whole thing?
Yeah.
It sounds like an unlikely premise to me, I think.
Yes, apparently somebody else has a documentary saying that Jesus went to India to learn about maths, which would have made more sense, because the Indians were actually quite good at maths at the time, whereas, you know, we were sort of pagan types who didn't do very much.
I think Jesus' Gap Year could be a great film, though, sort of like Harold and Kumar Get the Munchies, or Road Trip, very similar sort of thing. Yeah, that's
well,
the,
we'll wait
it's
see
a fiction film.
We'll see what the film is like, shall we?
I'm worried the documentary will be, did Jesus go to England? The answer will be no, and it'll be a sort of a 3-minute wonder rather than an entire documentary.
It'll be a waste of time, I think, is,
yeah,
is what
but certainly the fiction film, can we get the rights to this? Because this is going to be the best road movie ever.
Okay, how do you get rights to something? Can we just, we've had that idea now. We've
yeah, put exactly.
We broadcast it. Surely it's our idea.
It's out there on the internet, so effectively that's ours. Yeah,
I think that's how that law works, isn't it?
Basically, from what I can understand, and I've not studied law as a specific individual subject, but my understanding seems to be basically that's fine.
Good, okay.
Any other Jesus-related news this week? Anything slightly more topical, or celebrity gossip
not really sure about that.
It was obviously big news back then. I don't know if there's any record of Jesus. I mean, anything, any goings on. Whether he had sort of issues with his wife. And,
whether he crashed a car or...
Yeah, I mean, obviously this is the sort of... Well, maybe it wasn't such a big deal, because no one seems to have any record of Jesus. There was
He had this squeaky clean image, just like Tiger Woods, didn't he?
That's true,
didn't get up to any kind of mischief, but he seems to have got away his whole life without that image being tarnished in any way.
That's true.
He had that big kind of angry fit in the temple when he was turning over tables and that kind of thing. He got very angry at once.
Wouldn't want to be a moneylender in the temple.
No, he would have sorted the bankers out.
That's true. Yeah,
but
maybe.
Where is he now? Why isn't he coming back?
Exactly. This is the point. Yeah, I agree. So,
speaking of bankers, the bankers they're subject to a lot of hate at the moment. They're not very popular people. But in Germany, there's been this unlikely sort of heroic banker figure. They call her the Robin Hood banker. She was a 62-year-old woman who transferred a lot of money from rich people to poor people. But she's been given a 22-month suspended prison sentence. The bank made a loss of more than $1.5 million, or £1 million, when poor people were unable to pay back unauthorized overdrafts because she'd been giving them the overdrafts and then using the rich people's money to cover it up. But it shows that there are some good bankers out there.
What's happening? Is she getting a bonus? No, she's going to prison.
She's lost her job and she's going to prison.
Well, I think we've all learned a valuable lesson there.
Yes. Philanthropy doesn't work.
No.
Greed is the way forward.
Absolutely. Because there's a lot of talk about whether we should be giving bonuses, these giant bonuses, to the bankers. And I'm sure there is probably a good argument for why we should give them money. But I can't help but not really identify with
that. It doesn't feel right, does it?
Sure doesn't feel right. And whilst things feeling right is probably not the best way to make policy decisions.
Well.
I certainly think they're a kind of extreme scenario. But I don't know enough about it. It's probably my main issue.
Yeah.
But... To be honest, why should I let that stop me? We never have in the past.
Does the government know anything about it?
Yeah, exactly. I would imagine not. We don't really know about that. But because John Stewart was going on about this, that we should give money directly to people and pay off their loans rather than give them to the banks, which are then supposed to theoretically pay, give money out. But I still don't understand that.
No. Anyway, moving on.
Robin Hood sounds good, so I'm down with that. It's been a bad week for teachers this week, or more specifically one teacher named Martin Rouse, 57. He is a chubby supply teacher. He's been found guilty of serious misconduct after stripping to his waist to look cool in front of students.
This is in a lesson.
He's a supply teacher, and one of the pupils at Sudbury Upper School in Suffolk videoed the 45-second strip on his mobile phone and posted the clip on YouTube.
He thought he would look cool by taking his shirt off.
Yeah. A pupil at the school said it was hilarious. People were goading him, saying, "I bet you haven't got their muscles." He told us all, "I'll show you," and started taking off his shirt. We all thought he was taking the piss at first and pretending, but he took his shirt off and started flexing his muscles. Then he said, "Look, I told you I do have their muscles." He put his shirt back on, but he was still buttoning up when he was teaching. Everyone was killing themselves laughing. Speaking at the time, he said, "I generally have a fairly humorous rapport with students because it helps them to work. It is not entertainment for entertainment's sake." Which, I have seen the clip. It is available on YouTube. It's certainly not entertaining. Well, not as just an individual act. It's the kind of wider implications that are kind of humorous.
Is it educational?
It certainly could not be described as educational, other than sort of a warning about the... having a high-calorie diet as you go into middle age. It's about getting them involved. Some of them are pretty bored and turned off, and you have to work really hard to get them involved. Maybe you shouldn't have used the word turned off there. Though turning on was certainly not going to be happening. I was trying to be cool. The footage shows bearded Rowles unbuttoning his shirt, whipping it off, then flexing his muscles before parading up and down the classroom. A girl pupil can be heard shouting, "Bless him," whilst other pupils collapse in hysterical laughter. One pupil said, "It was quite funny, but his big man boobs made him look a bit sad." GTC chairman Stephen Viner said, "We are satisfied that the facts in particular have been proved. That is, Mr. Rowles behaved inappropriately in removing his shirt in front of pupils." And I think that defines inappropriate behaviour.
Yeah, that sounds like it's open and shut case, really.
We've decided
that
to...
That is not an appropriate thing for a teacher to do.
We have decided to impose a reprimand for the following reasons. As far as we are aware, these were isolated incidents which resulted from an ill-considered attempt to control the class. I think when you're... I'm not a teacher, but when you're considering attempting to control a class, taking your top off is usually a bad idea, regardless of what's going on.
It would grab people's attention, I guess.
It is attention-grabbing, I suppose. But, well, no, I'm not convinced. No. But he's not been banned from teaching forever, but he can't teach in the Suffolk area, which is...
other counties are less, you know...
Other counties, it's fine. The video of the incident became public available, and Mr. Russell's actions were seriously detrimental to the standing of the profession. He was also found guilty of threatening to throw a pupil out of the window if he did not stop misbehaving. This line is sort of shoved in at the end of the article, not seen as a big deal. He was not present at the hearing in Birmingham and is now understood to be working in Sainsbury's in Suffolk.
Stripper or...
No. The stripping gig, I think he's going to work on that. He's trying to get an agent.
In his spare time.
I think it's kind of harsh to put him in Sainsbury's. I hope he's working out the back, because I can imagine you get kids running up to you whilst you're restocking the bread aisle and like whipping their shirts off and doing a little dance.
Or maybe if people are too slow at paying, perhaps he can try the shirt technique in that.
That's true.
This is a new danger that teachers have to face. You know, there's always the danger that every kid's got a phone, and some of them can film things on their phone, and some of them are likely to put anything in your lesson could eventually go on YouTube. And this is a very very new kind of danger. They might have got away with a lot of these things in the past, but now there's just no getting away with it.
Did you have any wacky teachers at your school that did anything that you would have filmed in retrospect?
You
don't have to name any names. We had a teacher at our school that got caught pleasuring himself in the classroom by one of the cleaners.
In a lesson?
During a lesson.
He was being pleasured by one of the cleaners?
No, the cleaner happened across him whilst he was...
What across him?
Happened across him whilst he was pleasuring himself. And he got fired and he's, I don't know, banned from teaching as well.
Yeah, that seems a little silly, doesn't it?
You really should have waited. That's a lesson there. But certainly mobile phones, if they weren't that prevalent when I was at school, by the end of school, kind of everyone had phones, but they didn't really have cameras on them that much. And yeah, but now you can whip one out, start filming in relatively high definition quite quickly, can't you?
Yep.
So another reason not to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. Your brother's a teacher, isn't he?
My brother is a maths teacher.
Has he got any worries about these sort of things?
I haven't really spoken to him about the dangers of YouTube.
You should warn him. If he's listening, be careful. That's all we can say.
Yes. Okay, well, I think I'm right in saying you're a man. Is that right?
Tick,
yep. How does that make you feel?
Manly.
But you don't feel a need to kind of talk about it and just discuss, you're not troubled by what it means to be a man?
Not really. I mean, basically, you've got a 1 in 2 chance, haven't you? So there are positives and there are negatives, mm-hmm. I think so.
Well, what's happening is there are these groups springing up, societies at universities around the country, where supposedly there is a need for young men to kind of join these societies to talk about being a man and what it means. Apparently young men are struggling to cope with the pressures of being a man in the modern world. So, for example, Manchester University spawned the Men's Society, Masculinity Exploring Network and Support. Wow. And at Oxford there is the Man Collective Oxford, MCO. Alex Lindsley, the founder of MCO, says there's so much conflicting information for men. There is massive confusion as to what being a man means and how to be a good man. Should you be the sensitive, all-caring, perhaps the feminized man? Or should you be the hard, take-no-crap-from-anybody kind of figure? Neither of those are particularly useful paradigms, but there's perhaps things we could learn from both perspectives.
I wonder which paradigm he fits into.
Yeah, I wonder. But this is a lot of people are criticising these groups. They say that their existence undermines women's ability to speak out for equality, and there are women saying that there's no need for them because men aren't subject to discrimination. What do you think?
Well, I think it's being a man can be quite difficult, and you do have a difficult sort of path to tread in life, I think. But so does everyone, and I think you just got to be nice, haven't you? That's what
be it nice. Comes that's down a good to. Good rule in life.
Be nice. Sometimes that requires a sort of more traditionally manly traits, and sometimes it sort of more feminine traits. So I think don't get stuck in a paradigm. Just sort of lend it to each. I'm on the tube quite a lot at the moment, every day, in fact. And I think that's a place where this sort of thing comes in, because some people expect you to give up a seat for a woman, say, but I think that's quite patronising, and you shouldn't do that.
Yeah, this is a rule that we need to establish. Yeah,
yeah. Let's get it out here now. Older people, I always give up my seat for older people, kind of.
But where do you draw the line? Who counts
true.
An old person?
I know. It's a really difficult one. There's nothing. I mean, and sometimes if I'm really tired, I'll choose to just look at my book or close my eyes so that I don't have to face the, you know, looking at an old person, kind of choosing to ignore them. I'll sort of be selfish in my own way if I'm really tired. But because my train journeys are quite short, normally I'd offer up. But certainly if it was a female of equivalent age to me, I would not give up my seat to them. I imagine that would offend
them. That would
probably
be offensive to most women, I would say. Yeah, pregnant women, definitely. But then there's another kind of awkward area of sometimes you're not entirely sure whether somebody is pregnant or not.
Yeah.
And you don't want to run the risk of, you know, standing up to let a perfectly fit but slightly round abdomened woman sit down.
Well, I imagine you wouldn't want to encourage obese people to sit down more than they should as well.
No, yeah, they need to be standing up and maybe doing some squats or something.
On a slight tangent, I've got a story. Obese air passenger in economy seat has picture taken. You think that's just something for Wong's Bongs, but I'll show you the picture here.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I'll be putting this on the Facebook group for those of you who can't see.
So I should say this guy is about the size of two chairs. He's also very tall.
He's sitting in the aisle seat. I don't want to think what he's sitting on because he's sort of right in the middle. But so this is rearing its head again, the sort of talk about obese passengers on airlines. That was posted to a blog by an airline attendant, supposedly. So again, that's another thing. That's a slightly separate tangent to this. Mm-hmm. With regards to masculinity, I don't feel overly threatened. I'm not a very manly man. I'm sort of in between, I think, so.
What do these groups get up to, you might wonder? Well,
drinking, I'm assuming? Is that wrong of me?
Well, we don't. Some people think that it might be that. Patrick Lehman from Royal Holloway University in London says, in some sense it has to be welcome because it's good that young men reflect on who they are and what they should be doing. That sort of reflected self-awareness is not something that is particularly associated with men, but I went to Oxford and it could, of course, just turn into another awful drinking society. Katrina Rylance from the Manchester Communist Students said that the society claimed to be about self-betterment, but its original aims were Top Gear shows, gadget fairs, beer drinking marathons and Iron Man competitions. In defence, the founder of the MCO says, there's been so much false information peddled. I'm teetotal and our first event was a sober pub crawl, and we've compromised on our beard growing contests to make it more inclusive.
Well, yeah, that's fair. I would struggle in that contest.
Fair enough.
We went to that to a hairdresser's recently, which is called the Men's Lounge, mm-hmm. and I was slightly worried that it would be really laddie, and you had to have a very forced conversation about football when you were there, didn't you?
Yes, I did, yeah.
Which is...
it was okay, it was fine.
That's tolerable. The one I had didn't speak to me at all, which I much prefer, but you got...
I had to have two forced conversations about football, actually. First by the guy who washed my hair, who was just like a
young work experience lad.
And then with the actual hair cutting man, I don't know whether he would want to be called a hairdresser or a barber or
I think a hairdresser. He's done you a style there, but we talked about this, whether the young lad who was washing your hair, because I the same guy who cut my hair washed my hair, even though I'd only washed my hair that day. But it's part.
It
of
did
the
seem
service.
A little unnecessary, didn't it?
It did, but it was fine. That's okay. That's part of the deal. And my guy was the same guy. He's obviously quite experienced and fine. It was all good. It was fine. And then I was sat there watching you get your hair washed by like a sort of 17-year-old, which a 17-year-old guy, and it just, and then maybe he was even younger than that actually, but that certainly entertained me, and I thought I would have found quite awkward, so I'm glad it was you that had that rather than me. Not awkward, but I don't know why, for some reason I think it's weird.
Yeah, it is weird just having a man run his hands through your hair, and he was, I don't know, it was kind of weird.
Yeah, like younger just than just you, felt weird. Did it make you feel a bit like a, I don't know. How did you feel while you were body was massaging your hair?
I was trying to think about the football conversation and just focus on that.
Excellent. Okay, so, well, laddishness, it's a really tough... It's a tough one to call.
Well, Martin Daubney, the editor of Loaded, said, "I don't think men are remotely confused about what it takes to be a man. They just get on and do it. My generation would not sit around and build a website about being confused. It's complete navel-gazing bullshit."
Wow.
I feel very intimidated by his comments, actually.
Yeah, I said, I feel threatened, even. Mm. I think we should boycott that publication. Where was that from?
Loaded.
Loaded. Oh, dear. Well, exactly. I mean, who buys Loaded magazine, really?
I don't know. Yeah, I think lads mags are doing relatively well in, as really? Like, compared with other media in their struggling publications.
Why would that be, though?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't.
No, get rid of them. Alistair Campbell's been in trouble this week. It's not quite on the scale of the dodgy dossier sexing up scandals, but he was caught. He was doing a charity gig at the Comedy Store in London. And
Alistair Campbell was doing a comedy gig.
He was comparing the gig. So he wasn't actually the comedian. But he got in trouble because he was sat in the crowd doing intense scribbling, and the comedians thought that he was trying to nick their jokes to use for his after dinner speeches.
Yeah. Or for Gordon Brown speeches.
So he's been he got shouted at and heckled down, but no one's owned up as to who the comedian was. But he said he's just a compulsive scribbler.
Campbell said he's just a compulsive scribbler.
I can think of some things to describe, some adjectives for him, but compulsive scribbler is not one of them.
Mm.
So he says he's not going to use any of the jokes in his after-dinner speeches, which is nice to know.
Did you hear the speaker, not the after-dinner speaker, but the speaker of the Commons, but John Bercow, he's been in kind of a... Well, not trouble. Well, kind of in trouble. It's come out something that he wrote a long time ago has become in the public sphere. He wrote The John Bercow Guide to Understanding Women in 1986 when he was a 23-year-old Tory councillor in Lambeth, and it was published in a radical magazine for young Tories called Armageddon. And he offered his own insights into what women truly want, including advice on how to pick up virgins, how to pick up refined girls. He said, "Women will settle for anything that breathes and has a credit card. Picking up drunk girls could be done by using the line, 'Maybe we could go back to your place and name your breasts.' To get rid of a girl, say, 'Don't move, I've just broken a test tube filled with the AIDS virus.'"
Well, he's got away with words, this guy.
He really has. This came just after some revelations about his wife talking about her history as a party girl, but nothing quite as embarrassing as this.
Do you remember when the Bercow came in during the midst of the expenses crisis, mm-hmm. and
as
everyone was like,
"Clean break candidate,
safe pair of hands, yeah. Clean break," and he's just turned into he's been accused of flipping his house, so he's in the middle of the expenses scandal as well, and then writing this kind of bizarre pamphlet.
It's really not worked out like he said it would.
No, but he seems to be getting away with it. No one seems to be too fussed about it.
No.
But the thing he said, to get rid of a girl, say, "Don't move, I've just broken a test tube filled with the AIDS virus." And it said, "An effective alternative was said to be, 'I hate your blank, 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 blank.'" This was,
"I hate your blank, 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 blank."
Yeah, that was it. Oh. So it's like,
"I hate
your," and then,
"about you."
I thought it was like, "I hate your," and then, you know, maybe the C-bomb, or "I hate your..."
What
something
newspaper
offensive.
Was this
is in the Telegraph. This is like
the Telegraph would not have printed a.
Telegraph
gone with just kind of dashes there, hyphens rather than asterisks. Or,
yeah,
it's hard to know what they mean there.
But I wouldn't say that was "I hate something about you." No. You would have said that it's "I hate your
something."
And what could we say suggest that might be?
I you would have to assume that's probably the C-bomb.
The big C. What a way with words he's got.
If you need tips on how to get rid of a woman, surely that's a kind of an easy thing to think of, but you would reject that because it's just not something you can say.
Yeah, the point isn't to say what you can say to get rid of someone, it's meant to be how you can subtly remove someone. There's plenty of ways. You just start screaming your face off. Until,
or say, "Get out!"
Yeah, say, "Get out." Ways to appear mental is not the same thing. That's pretty easy to do.
Yeah, I don't know how well these tips went down at the time.
Have you ever tried the "let's go back to your place and name your breasts" one?
I haven't. I don't think I will be either, you know.
Really? Why not? That sounds like a good one. That's a fun game to play. It can remove some awkwardness, possibly.
Is it something you've done?
I've not personally done it, but hey, it's a Saturday night,
so
we'll report next week.
Have you given names to any of your body parts?
No, I would never do that. That's not fair. Someone did nickname something once Russell the Love Muscle, but that's a separate issue.
Oh dear.
It was my bicep. Right, let's... on this similar topic, I've got some more tips for people, because we like to give out tips. I'm very much like John Burko, but yep. I'm just sort of not trying to attach my name to anything quite so severe. How to tell if a woman fancies you. Look at her feet. A man only has to look at a woman's feet to tell if she is head over heels in love with him, according to a study.
What kind of study?
Well, a study by a psychologist. Professor Beattie, Dean of Psychological Sciences at the University of Manchester. If a woman moves her feet away from her body while giggling to adopt a more open-legged stance, then she is attracted to you. But if her legs are crossed or tucked under her body, then the suitor's advances are likely to end in disaster.
Yeah.
And if he's talking literally, and it's a kind of literal advance, then the sort of crossing of the legs thing is probably... I think he's talking more metaphorically in this sense. And apparently women can... The same does not apply for men. You can't... We reveal nothing about sexual attraction through our feet, apparently. But unfaithful.
What do you suppose that is?
I don't know. Just can't multitask, probably.
Is this guy Jeff Beattie? Is he the guy? They used to on Big Brother have psychologists on occasionally saying what people's body language meant and that kind of.
I don't know if it's the same guy.
I vaguely remember the name from somewhere, but
it could be.
Is this study a PR for something, or is
well,
this
it's funny you should mention that. It turns out that it is. What do you think it's a PR for?
His book.
No, it's not for a book.
It's not for Jeff Beattie, he's being paid by somebody else to do PR.
No, it's...
Is it for shoes?
The research compiled on behalf of shoemakers. I've renamed them John's Boots, as you know my opinion, not on marketing. Or actually, maybe we should do some real ones. I couldn't remember, there was some shoemaker I've never heard of, so they obviously do need the publicity.
Mm.
Weirdly enough, the research also found that women judge men on their shoes, how stylish, clean and expensive they look, and whether they match an outfit. So, I mean, who can say whether this is proof or not?
Hmm.
So this
would be shoe news, isn't it? We didn't introduce this.
Oh,
such,
yeah.
But this is shoe news.
That's a good point.
There's some other big shoe news
really?
This week.
Should we play the jingle?
Yes.
Who throws a shoe? Honestly.
Yes, the shoe thrower has become the shoe throwee. Muntaza Al-Zaidi, I'm sure I'm pronouncing this differently each time, because it's often spelt differently. Some people spell it Muntada, and some people spell it Muntaza.
The British press cares not for such details.
No. But yes, the Iraqi journalist who threw his shoe at George Bush, he was attacked in Paris by another Iraqi journalist who threw his shoe at him, This guy got away and we ran away, and then Al-Zaidi quipped, "He stole my technique."
Good work. It was a similar technique. I've seen the clip.
It was very similar, yeah.
We'll put it up on the Facebook group for anyone who may be interested.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and we were also just talking about PR, weren't we? There was some very good PR stories, particularly one for a pharmacy. A pharmacy was launching something called the Alculator, which helps you to calculate how much... something on their website to calculate how much alcohol you've had, and Carol Vorderman was launching it.
Wow.
Yeah, Carol Vorderman. You'd think that she'd be good enough at maths to be able to think, oh, I had one beer and then I had another beer. That's 2 units and 2 units. Oh, no, that's 4 units. But no, supposedly you need help with this Alculator. And the story was that the average adult consumes 84 times their body weight in alcoholic drinks over the course of their life. Now, the Mirror took this idea and ran with it, and they've given us a great big list of how much of different things we consume in a lifetime in terms of the weight of animals.
Wow.
So how many hippos do you suppose of tea we drink?
Hippos of
lifetime?
Tea?
Yeah.
Are they, so this is like a cup full of tea, not like tea bags or whatever?
Yes.
So 20 hippos.
Four hippos. Don't be ridiculous.
It's the problem with using these abstract concepts.
Is it not
baby
abstract
hippo?
At all. It's very tangible.
Baby hippo or a big hippo?
Adult hippos. Four
African
adult
hippo
hippos.
Or...
I don't know how they've decided what's the appropriate unit for each thing, but biscuits, for example. What animal do you think you would measure biscuits in?
Buffalo?
No, camel.
Why camel? You want to choose something that's got it's predominantly body. Camel is a lot of leg going on there. It's just going to be confusing.
Well, yeah, in a lifetime you get through 677 kilos of biscuit, supposedly, and that equates to one camel. We get through 9 humans of saturated fat, 4 pigs of baked beans, 18 emperor penguins of chocolate, 34 blue whales of water, 23 goats of toilet paper, 1 cow of eggs, 1 warthog of shampoo, 1 polar bear of cheese, 10 rhesus monkeys of soap, 1 horse of potatoes, 2 walruses of bread, and 444 hamsters of toothpaste.
Wow.
So there you go.
That's amazing. I mean, part of me thinking that's a waste of time and just someone messing around in the office, but part of me thinks that's brilliant and we should use that. I mean, feet is a boring measurement. I mean, why do we even use feet?
Most people's feet aren't as big as a foot, so why?
No, that's true. Yeah, we should do how many guinea pigs' length is it or something like that, or the number of mice tails.
And it's more practical. If you don't have a ruler, you know, you can just pick up the nearest animal at hand. And
that's true. Yeah,
measure it like so.
I'm a fan of it. Got a story about a man who was banned from his local library after complaints of his body odour. It's quite a harsh story. Stuart Penman was barred following a string of complaints from customers and staff about his whiffy feet and sweaty armpits.
Armpits?
Sweaty armpits.
What kind of animals was he keeping in there? Gerbils.
I think his stench could be measured in 6 snakes worth of stench, actually. That's how many netball. He denied he's got a serious problem with body odour, although he did admit that his feet do stink. I have a bath every day, but I realise my feet do smell. I live with my mum who smokes, so I smell like cigarettes. I don't know why that would make his feet smell particularly.
Yeah.
He shouldn't use ashtrays or slippers, really. That'd be my advice. He feels he's being picked on because they don't like him. One of the men works there, tipped me to one side a few times to speak about it, and I appreciated that and would leave and have a wash. But some of the women that work there, they just tell me to get out because I smell in front of everyone. It's very embarrassing when they do that.
There's a very easy solution to this, and this is for libraries to, like swimming pools, have a little bath that you walk through before you get into the library to where your feet get cleaned, and then you go into the library.
Yeah, that sounds perfectly reasonable to me. The library said, we've sat down with him to see what can be done, and even asked him if he's been washing, using deodorant, and regularly changing his clothes. We asked him if he minded leaving if people complained about his smell, but recently it's got worse and we've been getting complaints. We've had people leaving and saying it's because of the smell. I feel very sorry about the situation, and it's not a decision we took lightly, but we've done all we can to help, and it's still not getting any better. When people were refusing to come into the library, we felt we had no other option, so they've written a formal letter saying he's got a ban.
His
girlfriend, Layla Spencer, 23, fumed, "We use the library every day to go on the internet. It's very unfair to ban Stuart." Yeah, she fumed. He's got a girlfriend, so imagine that.
It
makes you feel bad, doesn't it?
She hasn't got a nose or something.
I don't know. Maybe that's it. If that's his only problem, then that's the key. Yeah.
Have you ever had a problem like this? Not suggesting that you smell, but I mean, you know, with work colleague work or somebody colleague. Who smells, and it can be very awkward situations.
I guess so. No, not particularly. Fairly considerate. I haven't had jobs where I've needed to get that close into someone's personal space that it's been that much of an issue.
Well, presumably in a library, he shouldn't really be especially close to other people necessarily, but obviously it was a pretty bad problem.
Yeah, no, I'm fairly ambivalent or sort of unobservant when it comes to these type of things.
I'm told that when I was little, I was in a lift with a woman who was wearing very strong perfume, and I said, "Mom, why does that woman smell so much?"
Wow, good work. I like that. That's good. Do you do that now? If there's anything of you?
No, I was.
I wish. I'm so sad that your inner monologue's been so repressed. I really allow it out a little bit more because, don't quit so easily. That could be quite important. You could be structuring lives.
Honesty,
for people.
Honesty really is the best policy.
It is.
People through it, doesn't it?
Speaking of honesty not being the best policy, that's wrong. Speaking of honesty being the best policy. Thieves used David Brent ID. Thieves tried to steal £200,000 from Ricky Gervais, were caught after they used a picture of his office character David Brent in a fake passport. Thieves tried to transfer money from his bank account to buy gold bullion, but they were caught after turning up to collect the gold with a David Brent picture cut from a DVD cover. He was told of the scam in a phone call from his bank, which needed his permission to involve police. Basically, yeah, so they'd cut out a picture of him where he sat there at his desk with a little smug look on his face, and they'd use that in the passport. So, not smart.
Why?
I know.
Why would they do that?
Gervais said, "Can you imagine who was in charge of getting the photo? Dave, you're doing so-and-so. Julie, you're on the inside. Bertie, can you get a picture? Hey, what are you going to HMV for?" So that was Gervais' take on the situation. Speaking of how crime does pay, dopey prison guards unwittingly allowed a convicted drug dealer to grow cannabis in his cell and even decorate 1 4-foot plant as a Christmas tree. Goldtooth Mohamed Jallo, 28, convinced jail staff that his super-powerful skunk crop was really tomato plants. He grew it for 5 months whilst unexpecting officers and bosses admired his green fingers. And he got so cocky he put festive decorations on one to brighten up his cell at Verne Prison in Portland, Dorset. Eventually he was grassed up by a jealous inmate, cunning, and guards then identified the plants using Google Snaps. You could see the plants from the grounds as his cell looks onto the education department and communal outside area. They are on show for the world to see. He's currently serving 8 years for supplying Class A drugs. An inquiry is underway. Do you fancy a bit of Wong's Bongs?
Yes.
Wong's Bongs.
Bong.
Crisp Lover changes name to Mr. Monster Munch.
Bong.
Findus Crispy Pancakes now available in lobster flavour.
Bong.
Tupac Shakur and Muse feature on the Vatican's MySpace playlist.
Bong.
Polish Town buys new donkey for Norwegian Round the World couple.
Bong.
Britain's worst Christmas tree replaced with equally bad one.
Bong.
Groom tweets from the altar.
Bong.
Scientists create the world's smallest snowman.
Bong.
Whale delivers deadly karate chop to shark.
Bong.
Robin Williams plays Call of Duty and named his daughter Zelda.
Bong.
Brothers living in cave to inherit billions from lost grandmother.
Bong.
Couple making porn to play for their wedding.
Bong.
Jesus appears on iron.
Bong.
Australian dives face first into deadly peanut-sized jellyfish.
Bong.
Pig enjoys trampoline. And that's Wong's Bong. Yeah.
What's the Vatican's shortlist?
I don't know. They've got Muse, some sort of Tupac playlist. I didn't see much more of a story there, so left that one be.
And a man changes name to Monster Munch.
Yeah, Mr. Monster Munch.
This is interesting. People naming themselves after products. Meanwhile, in France, people are getting very angry because Renault have named their new car Zoe, and Zoe, if you're French, I guess. And Zoe is one of the most popular baby girl names in France. And a lot of people are very angry about this. One woman said, "Our daughters have a beautiful first name that must not be associated with a car. So let us unite to bring pressure on a multinational which is going to destroy this pretty name for our children." This is Sébastien Montreux. I just said it was a woman, didn't I? No, this is actually a man called Sébastien Montreux from the northern town of Obi, who says it's a scandal that they are able to use common first names for products, and he's launched a petition. This is Renault's new electric car, small electric car, which was launched in concept form this month. Very angry reaction.
Well, what are you going to do? McGann's had nothing to say about this then? They got loads of... Is that how they always do it, Renault? Do they always name after people?
They used to name their cars just with a letter R and a number. But since then, they've had marketing success by choosing cute and sometimes quirky names, things like Megan and Clio. But then there's the Safran of the early 90s and Velsatis, which was a fabricated name intended to evoke the futuristic image for the biggest saloon that they'd built. But that was a sales disaster, Velsatis. So obviously they're going with just kind of the cuter girl names. Renault, I didn't realise this, Dacia is a Renault's brand in Romania. And they have a Dacia Logan. That's a bit of a weird one. And there's that Citroen. Citroen have a van called the Jumpy, which obviously doesn't sound great to us English people. But, French people also, not just Monster Munch, but French people have sometimes named their children after brands like Chanel, Armani and Fanta.
Fanta, not good. Mm. They're like Orangina in France anyway.
Maybe there are girls.
That's why there was such a controversy.
Orangina as well, but Mercedes. That was named after Emil Jelinek, the German businessman who started Mercedes. His daughter was called that, and he named the car after his daughter. So obviously, he didn't think there was it devalued the.
Yeah, but
the
it was a Mercedes. It wasn't a Renault Zoe. I'm sure it's not going to be that good a car. Is probably the issue.
Renault said that the name evokes values of femininity, youth, playful spirit and vivacity, and it's also a reference to the concept of zero emissions.
That's quite good. A good comeback. You got to let it go ahead, guys.
Fair enough. Leave really. It be. I mean,
they're going to be probably a protest about it. I imagine not.
We'll see. Are there any names in English names you can think of that have become tainted by association with a particular product?
Not really. I don't know. It's mostly names associated with people, I suppose.
Yeah. But it's not like people who are called Mr. Kipling, they probably get some jokes, but I don't think it's the bane of their life.
No, but the thing is, I mean, if
that's a well-loved brand, I guess.
If the Shipmans are out and they just had a kid called Harry or whatever, just before it all broke, I mean, these are the sort of names which you're not going to take off, are they? Mm,
yeah. You'll worry more about mass murderers than cars. Is the thing.
Yeah, I don't think we tend to go that route, do we? Or no one cares, that's the other thing.
Mm.
People tend to name each other so ridiculous names in this country anyway that it doesn't really matter.
That's true.
Apple, for example, was that named after the brand? Or
I don't know. I'm surprised they didn't file a lawsuit, actually. Or maybe maybe it was product placement. Probably I never thought of that before. They're probably getting a lot of money for filing that.
I'm fairly sure that's the only reason.
Hmm. And Peaches Geldof, the fruit consortium, probably paid for that one.
Yeah.
The New York Tourist Board paid for Brooklyn Beckham.
Yep. And the gay scene paid for Cruise. That's to big up that sort of much diminished pastime.
That's great. So if you're a parent and you want to make a bit of extra money, yeah, I'm sure you can.
If you want to call your kid Paper Cuts, let us know. We're not
going to pay.
We'll give them a CD, at least for their trouble.
Okay, we can do that.
My favourite story of the week probably is about the TV lie detector expert who's been given a 24-week prison sentence after he was caught out lying to police over a speeding ticket. This is Bruce Burgess, who does the polygraph tests on the Jeremy Kyle show. He was snapped by a speed camera breaking the 30-mile-an-hour limit in Hampshire in August this year. He lied to police saying that he wasn't the driver, but it later turned out that he was. He'll have to do the 24-week sentence eventually, and he's ordered to carry out 180 hours of community service by Portsmouth Crown Court. Yeah, so well, there you go.
Speaking of being hoisted by your own petard, wasn't the security minister this week was arrested under the Security Act or something like that?
I'm not aware of this.
No, I'll have to check that.
Okay, we may have some updates on the petard news next week.
Petard news, that's got a good strand, that could run good. And run.
We could really roll
Harman,
that.
Harman was hoisted by her own petard recently.
That's true, yeah. And that Baroness Scotland, who the immigration minister, who was found to have an illegal immigrant working for her. The petard news could really kick off.
Yeah, and Al-Zaidi.
Al-Zaidi's shooter got hoisted by his own shoe petard.
Mm. If you hear of somebody getting hoisted by their own petard, or indeed somebody else's petard, then let us know about it.
Yeah, we'll have that. That'll be a feature next week, and we'll have a catchy name as well.
And a jingle.
Yeah, that could really work. So we're kind of running out of time. A couple of things I'd like to squeeze in. If you're unsure of what to do this Christmas and you're in America, you can go and watch Glenn Beck's new movie, The Christmas Sweater, A Return to Redemption, which has now been released for viewing. Would you be up for going to see that?
I would rather eat my own face.
Yes, indeed. I think that's one of the snacks that's on offer at... alongside the popcorn.
Glenn Beck is I'm sure we've mentioned him before, but a very outspoken right-wing lunatic on Fox News in America. I read this week about some American far-right think tank who are saying that Obama wants to impose homosexuality in the workplace. It's just unbelievable the stuff that comes out of the Christian right in America. Never mind.
You've got to have affirmative action. That's what civil rights movement has taught us. If we are to accept homosexuals, we have to make sure that everyone practices, becomes a bit gay at work, just to make it over. You over adjust, and then you are allowed to go back to normality afterwards, which I think is fair enough. It's the right idea.
Google have announced the most searched for terms in 2009. There are three categories actually. There's the top searches in 2009, and there's the fastest rising. So those that were popular in 2009 that weren't popular before, and also the kind of the biggest news searches. So what do you think has been hot this year? What are people searching?
So is this the ones that are popular just this year, or ones that are universally popular throughout the years?
Well, either.
Okay, pornography, is that one?
That's not one, no.
Yeah, right.
I guess they've probably cleaned up
the list.
So
this is Google searches. Michael Jackson?
Michael Jackson was in there. So in Britain, Michael Jackson was the sixth biggest news search in 2009.
So this is in Britain, yeah?
In Britain, yeah.
Peter Andre and Jordan, do they feature on there at all?
No, they don't.
They're not on there. What else happened this year? Expenses.
Expenses, no.
Expenses isn't on there.
No, a health issue.
Gout.
Gout has not been a big health issue in 2009. Come
Swine
on.
Flu.
Swine flu was the number one news story, just ahead of Susan Boyle and Jade Goody.
Oh, right, okay.
Yep. And the kind of the top searches kind of 2009, kind of not, that are also popular in other years, are things like Facebook, BBC, YouTube. These are all things you can access quite easily.
They mean the clue is in the title.
Why are people searching for them? I mean, for Google example, itself. Why is Google the 8th most popular search?
Yeah.
If you're on Google...
That's not too smart. Yeah, BBC, for example, is bbc.co.uk, youtube.com.
Amongst the fastest rising ones, number one is Facebook login. Number two is Jogos, which I believe is a Portuguese games site. And three is eBay UK. So yes, that was what was hot.
That's not the real ones. That's not the watered down ones.
These are not very interesting.
Yes, yeah, so Robert Pattinson of Twilight fame, I see, is down there.
Yeah, he's up there. And
Rihanna beats Michael Jackson.
Yeah, that is weird. Yes, if he's dead, you know, there's no new content to find out about.
That's true.
But that didn't stop Stephen Gately from getting up there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He was on the list. This is quite amusing. The winner of this year's Bad Sex Infliction Award has been announced, and it's Jonathan Little, or Littell, the American writer, for his novel *The Kindly Ones*, and his passage include lines like "I came suddenly, a jolt that emptied my head like a spoon scraping the inside of a soft boiled egg."
Wow, I'm feeling quite horny right now.
There was another passage in which he compared a woman's genitalia and a gorgon's head, a motionless cyclops whose single eye never blinks. And another bit that said, "If only I could still get hard, I thought, I could use my prick like a steak hardened in the fire and blind this Polyphemus who made me nobody. But my cock remained inert. I seemed turned to stone."
Surely turned to stone would be a positive at that juncture.
Well, yes.
okay, so that's is that a prize that goes out every year?
Yes, it's something that was set up by Auberon War in 1993 to draw attention to the crude, tasteless, often perfunctory use of redundant passages of sexual description in the modern novel and to discourage it. And previous winners have included Norman Mailer, Tom Wolfe, and Sebastian Faulks.
Wow. Yeah, it is quite an awkward thing to have in fiction.
It is. Yeah.
See, my dad is a writer, and there used to be passages of it written around the house on bits of kind of
passages
notes. Passages of sex description written
weird.
Around the house as I was a youth. So I can understand this.
And that's made you regardless the of, individual that you are today.
That's one of the contributing factors. But regardless of how good the prose is, the whole related to your parental, I mean, it's going to be cringeworthy and disturbing, isn't it? So
yeah, it's a pretty difficult thing to get right.
Yeah, so there you go, Dad. That's all your fault. So have you got anything else this week?
I think that's a good note
to end on. Well, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, we'll see you next time.
Bye.